Hello and welcome to the Romantically Inclined podcast. This is episode 18. Again, if you're confused about the numbers of my podcast, that is because some episodes are Patreon exclusive episodes. So if you're wondering where the previous episode is, that's where it is. Today, I am bringing Allison Cochran to the podcast to talk about her book, Kiss Her Once for Me, which is a sapphic romance. And when I saw the cover, I immediately stole it from my mom because she actually is the one who got the ARC. Because the publisher sent her so many romance novels and she really doesn't read romance that often. And so the minute I see it, I'm just like, well, this is coming home with me. No one can see it, the cover, because it's a podcast, but it is absolutely adorable. So you should head to either Allison's or my Instagram to see the cover. And yeah, before we even get into it at all, I would just like Allison to talk about her book. It just came out on November 1st, so it's relatively new release, correct?
Yes, it is.
So The Charm Offensive was your debut novel, and that got really big, like really fast. I read it and absolutely loved it, wrote like a whole review for it. So this is your second traditionally published novel?
Yes. And my second novel, just like as a whole.
Yeah. Sorry. I just wanted to make it clear that it is traditionally published through, Atria Books.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to grab it, you can find it in bookstores. But what is the difference between like publishing a debut novel and publishing your second novel? Is it a big difference? Is it just as stressful?
It's like totally and completely different and definitely worse in like 90% of the ways. Cause like when you publish a debut, like, I don't know, for me, I wrote The Charm Offensive like for myself, for funsies. And then after I wrote it, I was like, hey, maybe I could try to pursue this like publishing thing. And so it was just such a different process in terms of like being a book of my heart that I then like shared with the world. And it was horrifying and scary, and like lots of therapy was required to get through the debut process. But with publishing a second book, it's the complete opposite. Like my agent, we had just sold The Charm Offensive, and my agent was like, okay, like what is your second book? And I was like, oh my gosh, it was like June of 2020 and we were in lockdown and I had only been talking to my sister and my dog, and like I had no creative ideas. And so it was very much like, you have to come up with an idea like on the spot. You have to then like I had to send like a proposal to my agent. And then we had to like go through that revision process before I could start writing. And then we sold it on option to my editor, which means I had to only write the first 100 pages to sell it to her. And so it's just completely different because you're like writing professionally, like you're writing for other people, and also you like can picture some of your readers, and so you're just like, oh my gosh, what if they hate it? And it's like far more stressful.
I was gonna say, it seems like a different kind of there's the stress of, you know, getting a book published for the first time, but then a stress of now people loved it and you have to follow that up, and that I would crumble under that kind of pressure. I'd be like, yeah, I think I'm just going to retire right now.
I did crumble under that pressure. Like there was a lot. Yeah. It was tough because once you can like picture your readers and like, you know what they loved about your first book, there's that like that fear of disappointment and that like knowledge that people are going to compare it to your first book. Like when you write a first book, no one knows who you are. So like, there's no point of comparison. Like everyone is going into it fresh. But with a second book, yeah, there's definitely more of that like internal fear.
And for those who haven't read The Charm Offensive, it is a book where an like IT genius goes on the bat, like a show like The Bachelor. For legal purposes, it is not The Bachelor. And he is demisexual, correct? Or yes. He doesn't even know he is until he falls for the camera guy instead of one of the ladies he is supposed to be. Or he wasn't a camera guy. He was a producer. Falls for a producer who is like trying to keep this like star on track for falling in love with a woman on the show, which is the point of the show. And he's just like, but I am wrestling with my feelings for a man and my first time like falling in love. And so this is another queer romance, and it features two women. And I'm not super familiar with sapphic romances, as only in part because they're a little bit harder to come by, which is why I think it is so wonderful that we have a traditionally published one, because a lot of queer romance is in the indie arena because it's a little bit harder to get traditional publishers interested in queer romance stories. So this is wonderful. And I know I've been hearing a lot that people were a little bit disappointed that whenever they found a sapphic romance, it was two femme women falling in love. And so on all your beautiful Canva advertisements for the book, you made sure to mention that one of them is butch. And so I think that is going to be a total hit with all the people who've been begging me to do a whole feature on sapphic romances, because on my Patreon, every time I ask people what they want me to read, it's always like, read some more sapphic romances. Like, we need you to recommend sapphic romances to us. So what gave you the inspiration for Kiss Her Once For Me, which is and tell us about it.
Yeah.
But I think it'll be more important coming from your voice instead of my own.
So the inspiration, embarrassingly enough, because it was June of 2020, as I said, I had like no creative ideas. I was pretty sure that like I had already written about the only thing I know, which is reality dating shows. And so I was like, that's it. That's all I have in me. And so I was super stressed, and I ended up like making a list of like romantic comedies I loved as a kid. So like, I loved watching romantic comedy movies growing up. And While You Were Sleeping, starring Sandra Bullock and Bill Pullman, was like my absolute favorite movie when I was 10 years old. I was a weird kid. And I would just like watch that VHS, like with my dad over and over again.
With your dad?
With my dad. Yeah. My dad is awesome. My dad like loves rom-coms. And so we would watch rom-coms together. My mom doesn't care about them at all.
I love that. I think my dad would just like, I don't know if he could watch a rom-com with me today, let alone when I was 10.
No, yeah. These were like, you know, rom-coms like that are so PG. Like, yeah. They don't even kiss until they're already like engaged. You know, it's
perfect. It's like a K-drama today. You spend like the entire time just waiting for them to hold hands or something.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah. And so I was like, okay, well, like, I love While You Were Sleeping. I could like make it gay and write about that. And the inspiration for the love interest is obviously Bill Pullman's character in that movie. And like, if you have seen the movie, Bill Pullman looks exactly like a Portland butch lesbian, that entire movie, right? Like it's the 90s. So he's got like this floppy hair situation. He wears like flannel tucked into like light wash jeans and like a Carhartt and work boots. And he just straight up looks like a Portland butch lesbian. And so in terms of like why I made the love interest butch, like part of it was just like, butches are hot, like mask presenting lesbians, like love them. But also was because like, in my head, I was basing that character off of Bill Pullman.
She is even named after Bill Pullman.
Exactly. Correct. Her name is Jack.
You're so not even Bill Pullman's character. Pretending that it's not directly influenced by the story. I've never seen it. So I looked it up and I was like, and his name is Jack. Okay.
Oh my gosh. I'm heartbroken that you have never seen this classic film. Sandra Bullock is just at her absolute like most charming.
I looked it up, and I love Bill Pullman too. So I was like, how have I not seen this? And I'm definitely going to, I need to figure out where I can watch it. But it's just that I never really watched rom-coms. Like at age 10, I was watching like Tremors 3 or like Watership Down. Like my parents had the weirdest collection of movies to watch on car rides. And it was just like that, The Mummy. And The Mummy is a rom-com, honestly. But I didn't really watch rom-coms until I think I was like in college and needed to have like the front desk had all these movies you could rent. And so my friends and I would always go down and rent. And I think that's where I started watching some rom-coms. But this one just slipped like right under the radar for me.
Yeah. I mean, that's great news because that means you can watch it for the first time.
I'll appreciate it more now.
I think you will too. But yes, it's wonderful. So yeah, I just wanted to write like gay or Bill Pullman, you know, lesbian Bill Pullman. And so that was kind of the starting point of this book.
And so the book is about a young woman named Ellie who is kind of down on her luck, meets a woman at a, like, was it a bookstore?
Yeah, they meet at Powell's.
Or coffee shop or so. Oh yeah, I saw it was Powell's inspired meet cute. So she meets this wonderful woman, and but then her entire life falls apart like the next day. And a year later, she ends up falling, or not falling for, but agrees to a marriage of convenience with Andrew so that he can get his inheritance. Yes. Which I'm like, modern marriage of convenience? Like, yes, please. Everyone's always asking me for them, and I can never really come up with that many recommendations. So this is perfect. And finds out that Andrew's sister is Jack, the woman that she met at the store and fell for. And so now they have to keep up this like fake marriage or fake engagement pretense with the woman that she's like in love with around them all the time. And it said, I wanted to clarify some things because you described it as a Hallmark Christmas movie, but also not a Hallmark Christmas movie. Can you explain what you mean by that?
I mean, because I feel like when you, so like it's a Christmas romance, right? So it takes place over the holidays, like the, yes. And the plot is like chaotic and contrived. Like there's a fake marriage situation. She goes to this man's like family's cabin for Christmas. Like it has a lot of the like because it's a holiday book, it has a lot of the like trappings of like a Hallmark Christmas movie. But also like Hallmark Christmas movies are like not about sapphics ever. Like there are no butch lesbians in
it's usually just
Hallmark
like
Christmas movies.
Woman meets dark haired man.
Yes, exactly. In small town. It has like kind of a dual timeline. It has open door sex scenes, but I know not quite like your level of open door sex scenes. I know they're
I'm all over the board. I know a lot of people just like really shoehorn me into like porn, basically reading porn. But yeah, I definitely love, like one of my favorite books is The Tourist Attraction by Sarah Morgan Thaler, which is like a closed door slow burn. One of my favorite books. So I definitely can appreciate a softer, less hardcore sex scene.
I'm so sorry to stereotype you like that. It's just that I actually, like in this interview, I think I am the fangirl. Like I live for your memes. I show them to my partner all the time and like, she doesn't care. She like doesn't know what they mean. Yeah, but I'm always just like,
either.
I was like, you have to watch this. It's so funny. And she's like, always really confused. But yes, your account has like saved my life during the last year. It's brought me so much joy.
That's funny because since I read The Charm Offensive, I've known about you and absolutely adored it. But I just never really think that authors know that I exist. Like, because I'm just here to fangirl over authors. And so when authors are like, oh yeah, like I see your stuff, I'm like, how? Like I forget that it's like a public Instagram that anybody can see. And
yeah, I like have followed it,
shared my thing once, and I was like, what is happening? Like
because your content is amazing and hilarious, and I like love hearing all about monster dicks, so that part, like it just fills my heart. But yeah, so it's not to go back to the question, it's also just not a Hallmark Christmas movie. Like it definitely deals with some topics that are more serious, like you know, the main character lives with generalized anxiety disorder and she has like really sucky parents who she is estranged from. So that's kind of, I don't know, it's like a Hallmark Christmas movie, but also like it just isn't.
Do you have a favorite Hallmark Christmas movie?
Oh my gosh, that's such a hard question. I think the one that I thought about, and I wish I could tell you the title because I'm a failure, but
I'm pretty sure it's just like there's like three titles that they just slightly change. So I'm sure it's hard to remember them very clearly.
But there's one that is like a fake relationship go to the parents' house for Christmas where she like gets dumped, I think, at the beginning and has to like hire this boyfriend. And the boyfriend is like some out of work actor who's like twirling signs on the street and she like meets him.
An ideal. And it for a fake
exactly and then she's just like, sure, like let's be alone together. I think she does like a background check or something, but and like brings him to her parents' house. And I don't know why I love that one, but it's just so, it's just like great fake relationship, hits all the buttons. They like sing around a piano together and it's like romantic, but they sing like, gosh, I can't even remember what they sing, but it's like a really serious, not romantic Christmas song. And it's just
like the little, I'm picturing like the little drummer boy or something. It's just like,
no, it's happening. Yes. I mean, honestly, I think you could make little drummer boy sexy, but I feel like, the song they sing is something like deeply religious and I'm like, okay. Cause it's Hallmark, but anyway, it's fantastic. I could not tell you any of the actors' names or what that movie is called. But I think it's on Netflix.
Cause but
I,
it like, exists somewhere.
It exists. And I used to watch it. Like, it used to be like, I would come back to that one. That's a rewatch for me.
Well, clearly tropes that you really enjoy, obviously.
Exactly. And then I just stole them.
Speaking of tropes though, is there like, are there tropes that you, or themes or anything that you would really like to see brought into like queer romances more? I feel like a lot of queer romance is like, pretty tends to be pretty firmly like grumpy sunshine for some reason. That's like a really big trope in all of the LGBTQIA plus romance novels that I have read. And so I'm curious, as someone who writes queer romance and theoretically also reads quite a bit of it, if there's anything you'd like to see, it doesn't even have to be tropes or themes, just anything you'd like to see brought into the genre a little bit more.
Yeah, I mean, I think like there are a lot of like queer romance authors who are like amazing at writing tropes. So like Alexandria Bellafleur, her next sapphic romance is called The Fiancé Farce, I think. And it is a marriage of convenience sapphic book. So for your listeners who are hankering for some recommendations.
I'm so sorry.
So like there are tons of great like tropey sapphic romances. Mm-hmm. I think for me, like, I would love to see, you know, more butch or like mask presenting lesbians or bisexuals, like in sapphic romance. I would love to see like sapphic romance, in terms of what seems to be selling to traditional publishers is like overwhelmingly white. Mm-hmm. And so like, I would just love to see publishers, you know, buying more diverse stories. And then also I would love to see more like trans, representation in sapphic romance. And so like, because again, that's like the reality for, you know, a lot of queer relationships are not two cis people. And so, those are all things I would love to see more of. But as for tropes, like I want all the cheesy tropes in my, like, I want to have like, I think my dream is to have so many sapphic books that like, I can't read all of them. And like this year it almost happened. Like there are so many traditionally published sapphic books that came out this year. But I want like ones that are just literally like popcorn fluff. Like I want ones that are just like, yes, like give me just trope after trope after trope. I want them all. That is like, I want that. I want just like amazing, any trope that we see in hetero romance, like I want it for us.
I have seen that like a lot of people want their tropes to be a little bit more subtle. Like they don't want it like shoved in your face that one is grumpy and one is sunshine, or, you know, that like it's a very dramatic fake relationship situation. And I'm like, no, I want just tropes literally just piled on top of each other to the point where it's like spelled out, like he's like, I'm too grumpy for a girlfriend, and she's like, but I'm son, like I want it just like thrust into my face. So I am totally there for that situation where it's just like, I want like not just two or three tropes, I want the entire book to just be a trope of itself, basically.
Yeah, like I want a balance. Like I love like sometimes when tropes are more subtle, or we're like, I love picking up a book and like even not knowing what the tropes are. Like that can be really fun. But sometimes I just like, I want to read something that is delightfully like happy and joyful. And so I want more queer books like that.
Where it's I definitely know there's a split going on right now between people who love the, like we talked about earlier, but the Canva advertisement where it's like a cover of the book and then you have arrows pointing that just like spell out the tropes. And then there's people who are like, I do not want the trope. I don't want to know the tropes going in. I just want to read the blurb and like kind of have, you know, it hints towards tropes, but then I want to go in basically blind. And I think I have an appreciation depending on the book for each one of those styles.
Yeah.
But I will say that the advertisements that I do with like the arrows, those advertisements are what gets me. Like when I'm flipping through Instagram and I see that, I definitely pause and I'm like, interesting. Like, I would like to know more about this very specific line that they wrote here. Like, it'll just be like, in one of mine, I wrote like, need some like motherfucking patience or something. And so people were like, okay, like I need to figure out what that line means in terms of like, why does he need patience and stuff? So I don't know. I think there's definitely people who are on both sides of that argument who want, there's always people on both sides of every argument. So I guess that's just life. That's life. But people tend to not like the way I advertise books sometimes, but I'm like, it's okay. That's why my reviews are on my different page than like my funny content. But you did bring up that the heroine in this, Ellie, is bisexual. And yeah. I think this is my first book where the hero is bisexual, but ends up in a same-sex relationship. A lot of the times I'm reading that, you know, it doesn't make a person any less bisexual to be in a heterosexual relationship, of course. But I do think that that most of the books I've read so far, they are bisexual, but the book focuses on a heterosexual relationship. So I really love that there's that aspect of the book as well, that, and I'm sure that ends up being, that's why she can be with the brother and with Jack at the same, or not the same time. This is not that kind of book.
No, I promise. It's not horrible bisexual representation. No. It is not like perpetuating bisexual.
It is not an incestual relationship either. It's not a reverse harem. This is not a why choose romance. This is strictly a one partner situation. For anybody who panicked there for a moment and didn't want to read that, it's fine. I'm curious, The Charm Offenses was your first book that you got published. What was the first story you ever, if you remember, that you ever sat down to write? Like, it could have been age 10, if you remember. Did you start in fan fiction or?
I absolutely remember. And in fact, I did start in fan fiction when I was 6 years old and I wrote Barney the Dinosaur fanfic.
No.
I mean, it was like, I was six. So like, I think the story was like Barney and Baby Bop like went to get ice cream together.
Oh my God.
And it was one of those like where your teacher like makes the little like folded book and you just have to like write on the lines. Like, yep. And I-
It was for school.
Oh, it was for school. Yeah. No, it was like a school assignment that I turned in Barney the Dinosaur fanfic. But I like think that my entire life has been like chasing the high I got. Like from writing that story. Like I loved it. I was like so proud of myself, my little book, and like just thought that I had like written such a riveting tale that I was like, this is it. Like, this is what I meant to do. I gotta write more. And so that one has like really stuck in my head.
Yeah,
like my,
it's gonna be stuck in my head too, I think.
Yeah, I'm so sorry.
I love that though. That's a really fun story to tell people. I'd bring that up at like family parties. I'd bring the book to family parties.
I mean, like my parents practically do that for me. So like it all works out. Like I don't have
so
to.
So proud.
Yeah. My dad who, you know, like introduced me to rom-coms. Like I am shocked because he has read both of my books, like cover to cover. And then he like also listened to both of the audiobooks just to see how the audiobooks were. So like he has like read them multiple times. He has like way too many copies on his bookshelf. Like he's so cute about it. And like my mom reads them too. But my mom is like, my dad is an avid reader. So like he also, like we have that connection. Whereas my mom is like, she can't sit still. So she reads like a couple books a year.
That's like my mom reads for, like, she's a virtual bookseller. So she works for a bookstore out of state and she just does book talks for them and things like that. And then my dad reads like 5 books a year. So they like could not, my mom probably reads like a book every other day and she reads like heavy books, not like light rom-com books like I do a lot of the time. She's reading like nonfiction and stuff like that. And she still like whips through them. And every so often though, she reads one, she gives it to my dad. and it's, she always hits it right, and he really enjoys it. But he's like, I think it's just so funny that, like, so, because that's me and my husband too. My husband reads very slowly. I read very, very quickly. And I feel like non-readers and readers just tend to like find each other and like form lifelong bonds for some reason.
Yeah. I mean, it's perfect. Cause like, I feel like if you're like, your partner probably has a different hobby, right? Like I love to read, actually my partner loves to read too. She just doesn't have as much time to do it. And like, it's not part of her job. So she just like, doesn't do it as much. But I always feel like there's like an alternative hobby. Like, while I read, like she can like work on her art or do something different. And like, it's, it gives us that time.
I feel like if you have two readers, almost nothing would really get done. If my husband read as much as I did, like our house would be in shambles. And, but he's a video gamer. And I feel like that is a very common situation. And it's almost because I think it's kind of similar because you're both kind of disappearing into a fantasy world. Especially those who play like, I don't know if the phrase is long form games. I don't know, like the really intense storytelling games where it's like, a shooter game, it's a like Skyrim or something. We have quests and everything like that. And so I feel like they're kind of similar when you really, you know, think about it. I don't think my husband wants to compare his video games to like my like smut, but I do.
Yeah, I feel like that's an apt comparison.
We have a few minutes left. So, and I know you hopped into this a little bit, but what are some books that you have been reading lately and absolutely loving? Like if you were going to give some recs specifically on some sapphic romances that you've read or that you're highly anticipating, what do you got for us?
Oh my gosh. So many good sapphic romances came out this year. Well, one that I definitely want to recommend to you is In the Event of Love by Courtney Kay, because it's sapphic. It's also Christmas. It is completely a Hallmark Christmas movie, but with lots of steamy scenes. And it's about like two bisexual women who fall in love. And so like, that's a great one. I highly recommend it. Astrid Parker Doesn't Fail by Ashley Herring Blake just came out. And so she wrote Delilah Green Doesn't Care. So this is the second book, and there'll also be a third book, and like, they're all sapphic.
I have that book on my shelf. I haven't gotten to it yet, but it is on my TBR, like physical TBR shelf.
Yes, I like love Ashley Herring Blake. I think she is incredible. Chensia C. Higgins wrote Devon and Chris Plan a Wedding, which is a Black romance and a sapphic romance and a reality dating show romance. And it's so fun. And just
so people who love The Charm Offensive.
Exactly. I highly recommend it for people who love The Charm Offensive. It's great. So I recommend that one. There's also a young adult sapphic reality dating show romance called Never Getting Back Together by Sophie Gonzalez, which is like two contestants on The Bachelor like fall in love.
And it's a YA book?
It's a YA book, yeah. I know. So, but like definitely check that one out. I'm trying to think in the non-sapphic realm, Anita Kelly, who wrote Love and Other Disasters, their second book comes out in March, and it's called Something Wild and Wonderful. And it's just like one of my favorite romances that I have ever read in my life. Like it's so good. And it's definitely more of like a rom sad.
No,
I mean, but like in a good way, like it's
people want that. Someone just posted on Reddit looking for romances that would make them cry. And I was like, that is not the vibe I am going for when I'm sitting down. But I was like, it's clearly popular because the amount of recs people had was insane.
Yeah. And this is one of them. It's Something Wild and Wonderful. It comes out in March, and it is just, one of the best books I've ever read. I'm obsessed with it. So I highly recommend it. It's an MM romance. So not sapphic. I don't know. There were just so many. Yeah. Alexandria Bellafleur has a new one coming out. And Count Your Lucky Stars came out this year, and it was great. Like highly recommend. I loved the audiobook of that one. Yeah. I don't know.
I have mostly weirdly historical romance.
Sapphic.
Like a little, well, and it's a novella, but A Little Light Mischief by Cat Sebastian.
Yes.
Really wonderful. I have that book on my shelf. I loved it so much that I bought, when I went to a book convention and they had it, I like bought it in physical copy too. Cause it's like, it's just so tiny. So I was like, I need this. And then Olivia Waite, I think that's how you pronounce her last name.
Yes.
Sometimes mm-hmm. I'm like
I think that is
the name, and so then I'm like, it that's how it's W-A-I-T-E, but I'm like, what if it's some very strange pronunciation and I'm just absolutely butchering it right now. But those are two that I've read, and so it's funny that because I just love Kat Sebastian so much. I've interviewed Same. Her before that I most of my recommendations came from things that she had recommended to me. But I love both of those. Both of those authors. And I'm curious, are you working now that this is out? Are you currently working on something else that will be coming out in the future? And can
yes.
you tell anything about it? Or
yes, I can't. It's been officially announced. So now I'm like legally allowed to discuss it. My third book is called Here We Go Again. And to like put it in tropes, like it's a sapphic road trip romance.
Oh, people love road trip romances.
Yeah. And I pitched it to my agent when I was trying to convince her to let me write it as my like sapphic road trip romance about death.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah. So it's also like a little bit sad.
Are they like road tripping to a funeral or something? Or
no, like it's the premise of the book is like these two childhood friends who like have a lot of like history and a lot of negative history kind of reunite when their former high school English teacher is like dying of pancreatic cancer. And he tells them that like his dying wish is to drive from, they live in Washington State, like where I live, to Maine. And so literally it's like these two women agreeing to take him on this death road trip across the country.
And they, like morbidly sweet.
Yeah. Yeah. It's sort of morbidly sweet. And like, I think it's really funny. I mean, I'm hoping like no one has read it yet. So I don't know if like any of my jokes land. Like,
I
so
thought it was funny.
We'll see. I laugh when I'm writing it. But yeah. And so they like get off track on their journey and like end up doing a bunch of like zany things.
Did you have to take this road trip so that it would be completely accurate?
I did a huge stretch of it, but I did it in reverse. So like a big part of the, a big part of the story takes place in Ocean Springs, Mississippi, which mm-hmm. I know like, again, doesn't make any sense because they're going north to north. But they end up like getting off track. And so my sister and I drove from Ocean Springs, Mississippi, like home, you taking the exact path
that
they take in the book. Yeah.
I'm having to like not act it out, but live the life of your characters for a short period of time.
Exactly. Yeah. And like, I have like tons of notes on my phone and like, it's been over a year now. And so I don't know what half of them mean, but it's still, it's great.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the podcast today. I learned an awful lot. I got some great recommendations. Like I need more. I mean, I always need more. But I'm like looking at my TBR. I'm like, well, this is double what it was on January 1st. Like, how did that happen? People need to stop writing such amazing books.
I know.
I'm sorry.
I agree.
Everybody needs to take a pause so we can all catch up.
And they all just need to send me audiobooks. Like I can listen way faster than I can read these days. And
so, that's why a lot of people don't realize that there's audiobooks are available through their library.
And yep. I love it.
I listen to Ice Planet Barbarians through my library, Burn for Me by Alona Andrews on my library. I'm just like, ooh, like there are so many boyfriend materials on Spotify. So if you have like paid Spotify, you do not want to listen to it if it is not paid Spotify because it skips around.
Oh my gosh.
Like one of the premium is that you can listen to things in order. And so if you don't have paid Spotify, I do not recommend you listen to the book. It will just hop around all like 800 sections of it. But yeah, free books on Spotify too, which is like, ooh, like what? So many options these days. Makes me wish I had a commute. I do not.
Yeah. But I like listen, like I obviously don't have a commute. It's like my bedroom is right there. Like I just walk across the hall. But I like listen to them while I'm like exercising and while I'm doing like chores and laundry and all of that. And it's like, I just listened to last recommendation, A Very Secret Society of Irregular Witches. And it was so good. That's one where like they hit you over the head with the fact that it's Grumpy Sunshine, but in a way that I loved.
No, like, I love that. That's my favorite trope. So
I like devout. It was so good. I just highly recommend that book. It's amazing.
Nice. I should have like an audio book narrator on here to like answer all my burning questions about what it's like to be an audiobook narrator because I have a lot of them.
I love that. You should get Natalie Nottis, who did Kiss Her Once For Me's audiobook.
Oh, yeah.
One, because she's super cool and like does a lot of amazing audiobooks. And then also she has like a lot of online content. And so I feel like it'd be a good pairing.
Yeah. Well, I should, that's next on my list to figure out. But anyways, back to, okay. So thank you so much for coming on and talking to me for a little bit and all your recommendations and all your insights into your writing and your, where your ideas come from, which is just wonderful romantic comedies coming to you, which is amazing. And yeah, so everybody listening, you can follow Allison on social media, or just, I don't know, go to her website and contact her and tell her. And yeah, so read whatever the fuck you want. Don't let anybody tell you can or can't read smut if that's your jam.